Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. I'd like to introduce Dr. Jonathan Stately. He's recently written a new book called The Power of Godliness. And in this book, he'll coin a new term in the LDS lexicon, cosmological priesthood. What exactly does that mean? He'll answer that in just a moment. We'll also talk about the trite phrase about priesthood and motherhood. What does Jonathan think about that? Check out our conversation. Before you do that, I just want to mention a couple of other things. We've got our latest transcript with Dr. Matthew Harris. That's been a very popular one. It was a fun interview. So those are on sale now. You can go to gospeltangents.com/shop, and you can get a copy there. Or you can also go to our Amazon webpage. The website is amzn.to/. It's case sensitive. 2JND MB B. So we've got that listed on our YouTube page if you want to see that again. I know that was kind of hard to follow. So the other thing that I would like to do is thank you to all the people who've reached out and talked to me on a Google Hangout. I'd like to talk to at least 3 more people. Just 20, 30 minutes thinking about putting out some new Mormon history classes, and I want to find out what's most interesting to you. So if you could please sign up on our scheduling page, go to tinyurl.com/y8pdzj88. You can sign up for about a 30-minute phone call or a Google Hangout, and we can just talk about what would be most interesting to you. So I'd like to maybe start creating some classes, and I want to do what's most interesting to you. So once again, love to have at least 3 more people sign up in the coming week. So, now back to our conversation. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm excited to be here with Dr. Jonathan Stately. You've just recently written a book. Can you tell us a little bit about this book?
Yeah, so the title is The Power of Godliness, A Mormon Liturgy and Cosmology. And what it is it's an analysis of Mormon practice and the construction of the Mormon universe through ritual and liturgy. That's a term that Mormons aren't particularly familiar with. We talk about ordinances more frequently and priesthood and authorities, but liturgy is a tremendously useful concept when thinking about and framing these topics. And it's familiar to Catholicism and Judaism and Christian Orthodoxy. And so even though it's a little foreign to Mormon readers, it's a tremendously powerful tool to think about our tradition.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that in just a minute, because I know that's not a term that I've been super familiar with either. But before we do that, let's get a little bit acquainted with our readers. I did mention you were a doctor, but it's not a doctor of history.
That's right.
Could you tell us about your background a little bit?
Yeah. So I have a PhD in essentially food or carbohydrate chemistry. What I focused on was electrochemistry of sugars for my dissertation. So I was looking at ways of transforming glucose or dextrose, common sugar in nature, into value-added value-added compounds using electricity instead of other chemicals. And it's kind of a way of creating renewable chemistries and advancing the field a little bit. So I did my dissertation on that topic. When I wrapped up, I also had a consulting business in grad school. One of my clients decided that my dissertation looked fun, so we started a company together, and we've been industrializing the technology ever since.
Okay, so where did you get your undergraduate degree from?
I'm a graduate of Brigham Young University.
Okay, and I'm a Ute, so we're,
it's okay.
We can still like each other.
But I did my PhD at Purdue University.
Okay.
In Indiana.
And you're a big Boilermaker fan, or?
I'm a big Boilermaker fan. I'm not a huge, I don't follow the sports so much, but I have a tremendous amount of loyalty to my schools.
Sure. Because we're here in Seattle today, and in fact, I'm here for some games at UW. Do you have any Big Ten, Pac-12 rivalry thing going on, or you don't really care?
I don't really follow the sports all that much.
All right. So, where did you grow up? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So I actually grew up here in the Seattle area. When I was 14, I moved to the Midwest, Kansas City area, Went to school in Provo and in Indiana, and then found myself back here after I wrapped up my dissertation, and I've been here since.
All right. Well, it's interesting to me how often or how many people who are wonderful scholars in Mormon history but have such diverse backgrounds. Dr. Bill Smith is a math major. I know that Richard Bushman once considered math as a major. I don't know if you knew that, but I'm a math major. I got a statistics master's degree. So it's interesting to see how many people with a broad background are so interested in Mormon history.
Yeah, Mormons care about the past. And the field is such that with those with interests can access the scholarship and even contribute if they're dedicated. So I'm grateful that it's accessible as it is.
Well, I know with your book, actually, there's a copy there if you want to show it and show everybody what we're talking about. A little higher. There we go. So it's a wonderful book. Just finished it right before this interview, so it's very fresh on my mind. But you originally started talking a little bit about liturgy. So can you give us a good kind of broad definition of what liturgy is, since Mormons aren't quite familiar with that word?
Right. So perhaps when Mormons have heard the term, it's been in relation to, for example, the Roman Catholic Mass and the liturgy of the Mass. But liturgy is a term that applies to the worship and rituals that believers participate in to celebrate their weekly devotions and major life events. So, for example, the sacrament of the Lord's Supper and how we structure that ritual, and even the entire Sunday meeting would count as liturgy. And so as we think about how Mormonism constructs reality for its adherents, we typically do it through these liturgical acts. And in engaging with liturgy, we have to start thinking about authority and priesthood and the way we order those acts. And so that's what my book is concerned with. I briefly overview liturgical history in Mormonism, the major trends in the introduction, and then I focus on specific rituals. I don't focus on every ritual in Mormonism, but I do focus on ordination and priesthood, what priesthood means, sealing, and how Mormons have conceived of the work of sealing, baby blessings, which doesn't necessarily trigger large ideas of Mormon, existentialism, but it really is perhaps my favorite chapter, because it deals with so many interesting topics that aren't obvious. There's a chapter on healing and authority and the construction of ordinances. And then perhaps a little odd chapter to wrap things up with on what I talk about as cunning folk practices, or what other scholars have called magic in the past.
All right. Well, and that's great. So. I'm glad you kind of outlined those topics. I found them all really interesting as well. So let's talk a little bit. I guess one of the things that really caught my attention right off the bat was the idea that the definition of priesthood has changed over the years. And so could you talk about that kind of evolution of the definition of priesthood? What was the original definition of priesthood?
Well, you mentioned Bill Smith, who you've spoken to in the past, and he's done a lot of excellent work. And it's a topic of tremendous social interest today. A lot of people are interested in what priesthood is and how it can be made accessible. I like to, when I talk to people about this, I often, Mormons have created a dichotomy oftentimes between priesthood and motherhood, which I talk about in the book, and I think isn't particularly historical. It is historical in the sense that it's been around for a while, but doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense within our tradition. But I will often ask, what is the motherhood? And that's a phraseology that doesn't really it's not familiar to us. It doesn't have an obvious meaning, because what motherhood is being a mother. That's what it means. So if you were to say the motherhood, you could conceive of it as perhaps a group of mothers. That would be the motherhood, perhaps. But priesthood is a similar construction. So early on, the earliest revelations and the earliest documents we have construct a priesthood that it is essentially the capacity of a priest. Just as motherhood is the capacity of a mother. So you would ordain somebody to be a priest or an elder, and that would be priesthood. And quickly, Joseph Smith has subsequent revelations that create larger cosmological valences to what priesthood is. But what I try to do is create a framework in the book that makes all the shifts in lexical dynamics within Mormon discussions of priesthood sensible. And the way I do that is by framing one area of priesthood as an ecclesiastical priesthood. So ecclesiastical being of the church. And so we have an ecclesiology where priesthood, you have a priesthood ecclesiastical office. So teacher from in the Articles and Covenants, which is that revelation Joseph Smith delivered when the church was organized, the office of deacon, teacher, priest, and elder. And those are the ecclesiastical priesthood offices of the church. In fact, they're the only offices of the church when the church was organized. And in subsequent years, you had, I haven't read my book lately. So in order of revelation, you had bishop, high priest, patriarch, and then apostle in 70. And then waves of organization, of revelatory dictation that took these offices and then structured them within quorums and presidencies and councils. And that's kind of an ecclesiastical priesthood. Then later in Nauvoo, ideas of government and kinship and salvation and priesthood swirl together into an idea that is made real in the temple of a heaven on earth where people that participate in the temple liturgy refer to themselves as the priesthood, the order of the priesthood, the quorum of the priesthood, the quorum, the holy order. These terms that we typically associate with ecclesiology, but is evident from the context of these usages that they're referring to the structure of heaven that is created in the temple. So when couples are sealed in the temple, Nauvoo, they are creating heaven. Heaven is not a place, it's not a destination for the righteous or the faithful. It's not a reward. It's not a gift to the elect. It's simply something that is constructed in the temple, on the temple altar, and materialized, that is made real. And so I call that in the book the cosmological priesthood. And now that I've done several book events, I'm tired of that and I find it annoying. And it is a little idiosyncratic and silly. I'm not saying that there was, you know, the Aaronic priesthood, the Melchizedek priesthood, and the cosmological priesthood. It's a heuristic device that we can use to understand the dynamics and what was the work that these rituals were doing in the community that performed them. And so we have an ecclesiastical priesthood and what I'm framing as the cosmological priesthood of the Nauvoo temple liturgy. And there's how Mormons viewed them and how they interacted with these concepts shift and change with successive waves of converts and generations of Mormons. And there's a declension of the cosmological priesthood in the 19th century, especially as church leaders pass away and the liturgy is shifted. And the way we perform temple sealings changes. And so there's a decline in the cosmological priesthood as a way of understanding the temple. And then in the early 20th century, and throughout the 20th century, there's this rise of a new priesthood cosmology that's based on an expansion of the ecclesiastical priesthood of the church. And so, for example, the idea that the priesthood is the power of God.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to go, because one of the things that caught my attention in your book was because it seems like you said something to the effect of the original church member said that priesthood was channeling the power of God, and then later the definition to changed to simply the power of God.
Yeah, so Joseph Smith was entirely restless in his revelation of liturgical and ecclesiastical structures to channel the power of God. So the first endowment of power, they were told in Kirtland that they should, they were told in New York that they should move to Kirtland and there be endowed with power from on high. And that's a reference, kind of an allusion to the resurrected Jesus telling his disciples to tarry in Jerusalem until they're endowed with power on high. That's fulfilled in the day of Pentecost. In Kirtland, they're told to tarry in Kirtland until they're endowed with power from on high. And they have a liturgical structure to facilitate that endowment of power. They have the rituals of the the Kirtland Temple, washing, anointing, sealing, and foot washing. And they have the Solemn Assembly, great manifestation of power. And Joseph Smith writes in his clerk writes for him in his journal that this is a great endowment, will forever be recognized as such. So this idea that we can have an endowment, a liturgical process to be filled with the power of God, or that we could have an ecclesiastical structure to mediate the power of God in the lives of the saints, and that once that power was manifest, you would see healings and glossolalia or tongue speaking and various aspects of the miraculous. So Joseph Smith was concerned with making the power of God real in the lives of the Latter-day Saints. Now, I would not say that current church leaders are not interested in that. That's not what I'm saying. But in the 20th century, instead of creating liturgical or ecclesiastical structures to channel the power of God, church leaders began to talk about the priesthood as the power of God. So if you were to crack open any of our standard catechisms today, so for example, the General Handbook of Instructions or the Preach My Gospel that missionaries train themselves with, or the Doctrinal Mastery Core Document that seminary students learn from, they all have a definition of priesthood. And the definition of priesthood is the power of God, and specifically the power of God that used to create the world, priesthood. And that really changes, certainly a different way of constructing the cosmology of the Latter-day Saints.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Jonathan Stapley. In our next conversation, we'll talk about women blessing by the laying on of hands. Did that happen in the early church?
There's no question that men and women have equal access to the power of God. So women are recognized healers. For example, they participate in the healing liturgy. Women perform anointings and they seal anointings and they heal the sick and bless and for comfort from the earliest days. Joseph Smith says this is, of course, entirely appropriate activity for the Relief Society sisters to participate in, and any women. Every church president after that says it's fine.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.